tonight on Arena. Alex Kapranos of Franz Ferdinand on Simply Needing to Play Music, and Ciarán Hinds and Neil Martin on performing a musical setting of Seamus Heaney's Sweeney Astray. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Glasgow band Franz Ferdinand will be in Dublin at the end of August. We'll hear from lead singer Alex Kapranos shortly. But first of all, let's listen to one of the band's biggest hits from their self-titled debut album. This is Take Me Out. Take Me Out from Glasgow band Franz Ferdinand, celebrating 20 years of hits, touring and global success. They were signed to Domino's Records in 2003, instantly achieved international fame with their first two singles, and their debut album won the Mercury Prize. Last year, the band released a 20-track compilation of their biggest songs called Hits to the Head, and on Sunday, August the 27th, Franz Ferdinand will play many of those hits at the National Museum at Collins Barracks as part of a 6-concert series entitled Wider Than Pictures. Absolutely delighted to have Alex Kapranos, singer, guitarist and keyboardist with Franz Ferdinand, join us on Arena this evening. And I started out with Take Me Out, which of course was one of the huge breakthroughs for you, Alex. What place does that song hold in your life memory and your musical memory now?
Well, I have very good memories of writing that song. You know, like, writing it, and also it took us a while to work out how to play it, because I'd written the verse and the chorus at slightly different times. I think I'd gone away and had a cup of tea and then come and written the chorus, and they were kind of at different tempos. And I'd never really worked out, for the first few times we played it, it just sounded like a total mess. It was either too fast in one bit or too slow in the other bit. And so I remember the moment where I had the kind of idea of like, oh, you know what, I'll just stick all the fast bits at the beginning, then we'll slow it down and play the rest of it. And I was like, oh, that's all right, that's good. So yeah, I've got good memories of that sort of stuff. And it's still, you know, it's a good fun song to play live.
Yeah, I can imagine when you do play that live, there must still be a huge reaction to it.
Oh, there's a good buzz, yeah, definitely.
I'm delighted to hear that cups of tea are the deciding factor when it comes to sorting out creative difficulties in the writing of songs. I thought that was only an Irish thing, but it's clearly a Glasgow thing as well, is it?
Oh my goodness, yeah. Like a cup of tea, like it sorts out so many good things in life. You know, I've got a cup of tea sitting right next to me right now. So like, yeah. A cup of tea is a very big part of my life, and it kind of regulates my personality. It regulates my day and it gives me joy. Yeah, I love a good cup of tea.
I'm wondering, Alex, how many cups of tea you had to have sitting beside you when it came to choosing the songs that were going to make it onto the 2022 album, Hits to the Head. How difficult was it to make that selection and to narrow it down? Because it must have been a narrowing down process, was it?
Well, it was actually a really enjoyable process. And I've not spoken to many other artists about this, but I presume it's the same for them. But I tend not to listen back to recordings that I've made. Like once it's been made, it's out there in the world. I'm not a very nostalgic person, and I don't really see the point of listening to it again. But this kind of forced me to kind of go back and listen to those songs again, and it brought back a lot of really good memories, like memories of like writing the songs and recording them and playing them live at different points. The process, some were kind of really obvious, you know. Of course, you've got to put Know Your Girls or Take Me Out, you know, because they were big singles and people would be disappointed if they weren't on there.
Yeah.
And yet there were others, like there's a song called Outsiders, which has always been like one of our biggest songs live. It's always been like a huge live song, but it was never actually a single. And some singles were left off the album so that could be on. And I guess things like that came later. And I guess that's kind of like when you're putting together a record like that, it's you kind of take on the role of curator, and it's kind of like, oh, this is the kind of mood of the album I want to put out there, and this is the side of the band it should reflect.
To what extent, though, when you are listening back with the wisdom of years behind you, I'm thinking particularly of those early days and, you know, Darts of Pleasure and Take Me Out. I mean, the rise to fame was, it's such a cliche to say meteoric, but it was meteoric and it was like immediate. Did it feel like that to you? Did those memories come flooding back as you listened back?
Yes, it was kind of immediate and also a long time coming. You know, I was 31 when that record came out, and I'd been playing music since I was like 14 or 15. So it was kind of like more than half of a lifetime in coming. Yet in the history of the band, I think it was like Darts of Pleasure came out like barely a year since our first gig. You know, like it was very, very fast. You know, it was very fast. And so, it was all quite a shock and quite a surprise. And I remember the general feeling amongst it. Well, obviously, we were having a great laugh and like enjoying ourselves a lot in the process. There was kind of like almost like an amused distance to the whole thing. It was as if you were watching it happen to somebody else in a way. It's like, is this really? Is that really what's going on? Yeah, it was a curious time.
And I guess that is the way of it. I mean, you're playing since your teenage years. The dream was always, I suppose, to be a big and a successful band. But playing music was probably more important, was it, to you as a teenager and heading into those early 20s?
Oh, yeah. You know, like that never changed. Like it's funny, like, not so much now, but a question I used to get asked when the band started off, like by a lot of journalists, was like, what would you be doing if you weren't playing music? And the answer is always like, well, I'd be playing music if I wasn't playing music. You know, because I think what they meant was like if you weren't making money from playing music. Yeah. But I'd always played music when it cost me money to play music, you know, like when I had to like borrow from my rent money to pay for the taxi to a gig or whatever, rather than money from the gig paying for my rent. So, and again, that's true for most of my pals who are musicians as well. It's the thing that brings me life. You know, where I live in Scotland, it's quite a small village, and in the pub there's a lot of sessions. I know for a fact it's very similar in Dublin and in Ireland. A lot of folk go down. You know, there's always a session going on every other night, and those guys that are playing that music, they're not making any money from it. They're not paying their rent from that music, but they're playing it because it brings you joy, and it brings a sense of meaning to your life in a way that nothing else possibly can. And it's the same for me. That's why I play music, because there's no other experience like it.
And I guess, I mean, obviously Franz Ferdinand has been such a big part of your life, but there have been some great collaborations along the way. I'm thinking particularly of FFS, which does not stand for what it might sound. It sounds like, of course, yes. It stands for Franz Ferdinand and Sparks. You know, we interviewed Sparks on the show a while back when all the movies and all that were happening for them. What's your memory of that collaboration?
Oh, no, you're right. We're very lucky. We did sort of like get to collaborate with some incredible people over the years, and making that Sparks record was a lot of fun. But it's funny, like another one just came into my head recently, because sadly, Jane Birkin died recently, and I was really fortunate enough to have worked with her, and we worked on a cover of the Serge Gainsbourg song, Sorry Angel, and I have amazing memories of sitting in a room with Jane, and she was just telling us stories about what it was like being with Serge and how it was when he wrote that song. And she was saying, like, yes, you know, I remember him saying that he had this idea for this line, sorry, angel, sorry, so. And I was saying, Serge, you just don't speak English like that. And he said, I don't care. It's how I want to write it. And she was amazing and so charming and like beautifully eccentric and the most endearing way imaginable. And I mean, when I speak to you now about it, I feel like I kind of need to pinch myself to think that it was actually real, that this huge figure had been in the room with us, and then I was singing with her a couple of hours later. You know, what an incredible experience. Yeah, we're very, very fortunate.
And let's listen to a bit of Song for Sorry Angel. For Sorry Angel there, Franz Ferdinand, Alex Kapranos of Franz Ferdinand with me this evening. I know this has been asked a million times, but there's something in the choice of that name, Franz Ferdinand. It's a great sound, but of course it has an historical significance. And I think this was in your mind even as you chose that name back in the day.
The first few gigs that we did, we didn't have a name. We were just playing at parties in Glasgow that we were throwing. The first gig was a show of some friends of ours who were artists. Like, they were all female artists, and we were like the boy band at the girl art show. And then we had a gig where we had to put a poster together for it. And so it was like, oh, we better get a name. And I was watching the horse racing on the television, and there was a horse called the Archduke. And that got me thinking about Franz Ferdinand. And you know, like everybody at school studies that moment where about his assassination triggering World War One. And as I was thinking about that and recalling my history lessons at school, it made me realize that he himself was not necessarily a great historical figure, but what was of historical significance was his assassination. And how at that point, it was like a pivotal point, a turning point where everything changed. I guess you could say the 20th century properly started at that point. Everything from like politically to obviously the tragedy of all those deaths, but also technological changes, all kind of like swiveled upon that one point. It made me think of it as a almost like a metaphor for what you strive to do as an artist, particularly as a musical artist. You strive to be one of those turning points where things are never quite the same afterwards.
Do you have a sense that Franz Ferdinand, that the band were pivotal in some ways? Did they change, or did you feel you were part of a change in the direction of music at the time?
I don't know. I'm always wary of making those kind of claims for yourself. And whenever I hear the musicians doing it, I'm always like, oh, I don't know. There's definitely two approaches to your own legacy. One's a very English approach, which is the way I see it. Like, it's just like blowing your own trumpet and banging on about how great you are. And then there's a more Scottish approach, which is to just play it cool.
Well, I'm guessing, Alex, that the Irish approach is probably a little bit closer to the Scottish approach in those terms as well. And I know you're not, you don't have any great, to quote Sean O'Casey, you don't have notions of operosity of any kind. But do you have a sense of the album Tonight in particular? You've spoken about that being particularly fulfilling for you in creative terms. Was there something that happened there that really worked for you creatively?
I just really enjoyed making that record, you know, and I think sonically, like that record did something that we'd never done before. There was a lot of experimentation in that record, and I can't sort of like speak in a wider term, but in terms of my own appreciation of what we've done as a body of work, I think that one for me probably pushed the furthest.
And you were aware that you're talking to a Dublin audience, I know. when you open an album with a track called Ulysses, did you have James Joyce in mind? Did you have Greek mythology in mind? Or was there something else in mind?
Well, I had all of that in mind. You know, I did read Ulysses when I was studying English at Strathclyde Uni. And I loved it. I loved Joyce. Like, what an amazing writer he was. I read The Odyssey as well, and My old man's Greek, and he used to tell me some of those stories when I was a wee boy, so I was very familiar with them. For me at that point, they felt like a real parallel between what was going on with Odysseus or with Ulysses returning from Troy and just being cast adrift on the sea and never going home, or it's so it seems. And you know what's going to happen at the end, that there will be an end to it. But for him, in the experience, like when he's going between all those places and all those particular experiences, it feels like he is never returning home. And that's kind of how I felt in my life at that particular time. It was exciting and I loved it, and it was very invigorating. And I still kind of feel like it. I feel like, no, I'm never going home, because the home that I knew before I set off on my own particular journey with the band, it doesn't really exist anymore, because that period of time, it doesn't exist anymore in that place. In fact, yeah, I'm kind of not looking forward to the returning home. I'm just enjoying being out there having the adventure. So you got next door, walk 25 miles, oh. Well, I'm bored. Come on, let's get high.
Well, you'll have endeared yourself to a Dublin audience, Alex Kapranos, by including James Joyce in a memory of your father. And what a wonderful memory that is of him orally telling those great Greek mythological tales. But in terms of home, do you think Glasgow, do you think Scotland is present in the music of Franz Ferdinand?
Oh, yes, it's unavoidable. You know, that was our environment forming the band. You know, I'm a mixture myself. I'm a mongrel. You know, like I did one of those DNA tests. Like, my old man's Greek, but like when the DNA came back, I'm a mad mixture. Like, my mum grew up in South Shields in the northeast of England, but like her side came back, it was a mad mixture of Scandinavians and a lot of Irish and Scottish as well, and goodness knows what else, and North African, Jewish, all sorts of things. Wow. Like it's, so yes, Scotland is my home. And you know, I moved to Scotland when I was 7. Musically, it's my home and it's my roots, and it formed the sound of the band in so many ways. Because the sound of a band is not just formed by what you listen to, but it's formed socially as well. It's formed by the people that you hang out with and the people that you perform to when you first get together. You know, I can see it in parallels with other cities like around about the world, like whether it's New York or something that's happening in Buenos Aires. I know in Dublin at the moment, there's a very strong scene. Those scenes really do shape your perspective as a musician.
But clearly, you know, you're keeping an eye on the scene then in various cities around the world. And Pillow Queens, of course, great young Irish band, will be supporting you when you come over here to Collins Barracks on Sunday, August the 27th. And I suppose it will be a bit like Hits to the Head. It will be all the big, the great ones, and some of the ones that you feel are undervalued that we'll be getting on the night, Alex.
Yes, indeed. You know, I'm really excited to be here in Pillow Queens. You know, like I've heard their music, and a lot of people I know have been telling me what a great band they are live as well. So, yeah, I'm really chuffed that we're playing together with them. In fact, it reminds me of last time we headlined in Dublin. We had Fontaines DC. It was, wow, before they'd released anything, and like they opened up for us. And so they'd had a couple of singles out, and a pal of mine had sent me something. And I was like, and I was on to the rest of the band. I said, we've got to have this band play with us. They're amazing. So, yeah, you're right. I do like hearing new things, and it's always inspiring to hear what's happening and what's coming out at the moment. And so for the performance ourselves, we're going to be playing the bangers. You know, like, of course, that's the point, playing a gig like this. But you know, I also know that there's going to be people who are hardcore fans there who will want to hear something new as, yeah, well. So there'll be a couple of new songs, which will be a little clue as to what might be happening in the immediate future.
Oh, you big tease, you. You might lead up then into one of the bangers, just to finish up for us this evening, Alex. You might lead us into No You Girls, because we can't finish without having a little bit of that, can we?
Oh, that would be lovely. I'd love to hear that song.
Oh, You Girls from Franz Ferdinand, who celebrated 20 years together with the release of their best of compilation album called Hits to the Heads. They'll be performing many of those hits, undoubtedly, at Collins Barracks in Dublin on Sunday the 27th of August. Final concert in the Wider Than Pictures series. You can get full details about this gig and all the shows in the series at singularartists.ie. Kilkenny Arts Festival begins next week, and one of the undoubted highlights is Sweeney, a song saga based on Seamus Heaney's poem Sweeney Astray. Seamus Heaney took part in the first Kilkenny Arts Festival some 50 years ago, and this performance of Sweeney will mark the 10th anniversary of the much-loved poet's death. The show will also be on in Dublin. Sweeney is composed by Neil Martin, will be performed by the RTÉ Concert Orchestra, conducted by David Brophy, along with singer Iarla O'Linnard, and narration by actor and Academy Award nominee Ciarán Hinds. Delighted to be joined on the line this evening by both Neil Martin and Ciarán Hinds. And Ciarán, coming to you first, it's interesting, in fact, that this is the project that I'm speaking to you about this evening, following on, you know, this I suppose version of Heaney's Sweeney's Astray, following on from the success of Untamable, the RTÉ documentary where you narrated the words of Cullum Tobin, which really looked at Heaney's love of the bog and the bog poems of Heaney. There's a little bit of a Heaney theme beginning to come up there, isn't there?
There is indeed. Hiya, Sean. Greetings from a very damp and dismal Paris. It's a bit like a bog here at the minute. it's pretty greasy and miserable right now.
Yeah, well, don't worry. We're in the same boat ourselves here.
Oh, okay. No, it's for me... quietly, you know, I wouldn't say like I was a mad, crazy lunatic for reading poetry every hour of the day, but I do love Irish poets and Irish writing, and then to be asked to be kind of involved in productions in which they are a part of is a great thrill for me. And I don't know the untamable, which is mixing sort of the bogs with Beckett. But when I was asked to do that, it was very thrilling because it was written by the writing was done by Cullum Tobin,
yes,
which is you know, the great writer. And then to be able to use some of Heaney's poetry inside it was a fascinating journey going into the bogland and the mind of the people and the mysterious, dark, dank world that it consists of.
And many speak.
This is another thing.
Yeah, and many speak of when you talk about Heaney, it is that Ulster sound that he has in his language. Now, I know you're up in Belfast, a wee bit far from the mid-Ulster of Heaney, but I presume you have a real connection with that.
I do in a way, because, you know, the North is, well, the six counties that are in it at the moment, we're all pretty close, you know. And what I love also about this Sweeney Astray that Neil has done this brilliant song cycle to is it's just all the names. It's a big rollicky ride that Heaney's written about this, you know, Sweeney losing the bap and being sent off. But it's all these great Ulster names like Dun Severig and Rasharkin and Mahara and all these names that Sweeney has sent out to covering all the land. So yeah, for me, it's almost like being at home, to be quite honest.
Well, that must be a good feeling. Like, going to you then, Neil, your first encounter of the Sweeney saga, was it through Seamus Heaney's Sweeney Astray, or had you come across it, like many of us at school previous to that, Neil?
Yeah, a bit at university. Not so much at school, but at university. And then through Seamus, of course, and you know, I worked with Field Day from the late 1980s, so there was all of that strong connection going back a long while. But what a fascinating story, Sean, it is, really. Extraordinary stuff.
Well, give us the bones of it then, just as we have Nook that shocked the clog. So just give us a teaser of what the tale is, and we'll come back and talk more through the Nook. But tell us first of all your 55-second version of Sweeney.
Sweeney annoys a druid, and he throws a spear at him, and they turn Sweeney into half man, half bird, and for the rest of his life he's to fly around Ireland and parts of Scotland and even parts of England. And he can't really re-engage with the life that he had, but he sees it from the bird's eye point of view, and it irks him. But he eventually relents and repents, I should say, and he's sorry for his sins. That's the kind of cycle. It's paganism to Christianity in a couple of hours.
Well, there you go. And you managed to do that in a bit less than 55 seconds.
Yep.
So I'm very impressed. Delighted that Ciarán Hinds and Neil Martin are still with me talking about Sweeney Astray, Neil's setting of the poetry of Seamus Heaney. And you'll be delighted to know, Ciarán, in the midst of that weather forecast, we promise maybe a little bit less rain now in the next couple of days. So we might be a little bit ahead of you. So there you go.
Go to fire.
There you go. Neil, when it came to the setting of this, did you just think the words of Seamus Heaney and his long version, Sweeney Astray, or did you pull in some of the old Irish as well? What was the thinking on that score?
I did. I used Seamus's book, and I used the Irish book that Seamus would have based some of his translation on, or one of the books that he based his translation on. But before I wrote A Quaver, Sean, I spent about 10 days editing Seamus's text down, you know, to make it a workable size for performance. And as I say those words, I shudder yet editing Seamus Heaney. But there's such inherent music and rhythm in Seamus's writing. It was really a joy. Once I got the bones of the story together, it was a joy to be setting it to music, because Seamus was an inordinately musical man within himself and a deep appreciator of music. And of course, then, you know, the other great element in there in performance is Éire Le Leonard.
Yeah.
And knowing that I was writing for that glorious voice, that stunning voice, really made it. Yes, it was a difficult, intense period, but and most of it, by the way, written in County Monaghan, Sean, in the Tyrone Guthrie Centre,
yes.
Suitably sylvan setting to be writing about Sweeney flitting through trees and so on. But no, it was a great pleasure, really a great pleasure. And then in the great hands of David Brophy and the RTE Concert Orchestra, sure, where would you get the likes of it?
Well, let's have a listen to a little bit of the music, and we'll come back to Ciarán and where the narration fits in around the music and what that role is in a minute's time. I have here with in front of me Now My Bare Skin. You might give us a sense of, because it the form of the piece, first of all, Neil, it mixes between narration and song, but poetry and prose, essentially, is it?
That's exactly it. And the poetry is with the singer, and the prose is with the narrator, kind of Greek chorus. Mm. And I knew from very early on it was very important to have a narrator to get through the story, because the sung word takes so much longer than the spoken word. And had the whole thing been sung, it would have been just, you know, not feasible. It would have been hours and hours long. But yeah, that's basically it. The narrator has the poet, or the narrator is the Greek chorus, and the poetry is with the singer.
So Now My Bare Skin, then, give us a sense of where we are in the tale. Obviously, he's fully naked at this stage because he's stripped of his clothes on the battlefield. That's kind of one of the things that happens to him, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And he going through thorn bushes and careering and crashing around the place. And, you know, he gets cut and he gets hurt. And he's, you know, that's kind of, it's a kind of parallel with the emotional hurt. And as we said earlier, the whole arc of the story really goes from pre-Christian to Christian times, paganism to Greek. To Christian times. So it's a kind of fascinating journey where the physical is analogous to the emotional transformation as well.
Let's have a listen to a little bit of Now My Bare Skin. The RTE Concert Orchestra here, conducted by David Brophy, and the voice of Éire Ollinard.
Now my bare skin feels night falling on my linen.
That's just a section from Now My Bare Skin from Sweeney. This is Neil Martin's musical realisation of Seamus Heaney's epic poem Sweeney Astray. Poetry, as we say, sung by Éire Le Leonard, and there's a narration involved in the piece as well, with Ciarán Hinds giving us that narration. It strikes me, Neil, listening to that piece, just how theatrical it actually is. And even in your music, you've picked up on certain theatrical modes, I would have thought, in that particular orchestration there.
Yeah, you know, so much of my life, is certainly in the former days and my earlier days, was spent writing theatre scores. And I'm deeply addicted to theatre. I love going to the theatre. And I think that's the way of it. I do think in a theatrical way. And can I say this, Sean, as well? I'm so delighted that Ciarán Hinds is involved in this, because I remember seeing him for the first time performing in Stravinsky's A Soldier's Tale, a few performances up here in Belfast, and the theatricality and the musicality that Ciarán Hinds brought to that Stravinsky really was inspirational. and deeply beautiful. So it's a great buzz to have you, Ciarán Hinds, on this gig.
Well, I have to say, Neil, you've stolen me thunder, because that was my next point to Ciarán. Because I saw Ciarán in that performance of A Soldier's Tale, and it struck me, Ciarán, that there is a certain aspect of what Neil asks from the narrator here that is very like this Stravinsky tale, in that there's dance and there's music performed, but essentially the narrator here is the chorus in a kind of a way. He is in the Stravinsky as well. It's a similar role.
I guess it is, yeah. The way I was looking at it, Sean, was that Irla, as the singer and the poet, is like the internal voice of Sweeney, with all his suffering and the state of mind he's in, his mental state, you know, his physical state. And meanwhile, outside that, you have the narrator driving the story along for those who are listening to it, to take the audience on the journey of what's happening to Sweeney. And then you get the personal when it goes into the song and the poem. Poetry, and then out again into meanwhile, because Sweeney literally is being dragged hither and yonder all through, as Neil said, all over Ireland, into bits of Scotland and back again. And he doesn't have a moment's peace. And it's kind of, I think it's really brilliant what Neil has done with the work. I mean, while he may have been mortified at trying to press a Seamus Healy's work, it's quite a brilliant job, because it's a real rollicking ride. And he's managed, in the middle of this big driving story, little drops of wry humour in between at the state of the poor man who's gone astray, Sweeney, who probably deserved every bit of it, because he was obviously acting the maggot, and that's why St. Ronan put manners on him.
Yeah, and the other side of it is, I think, in terms of what Neil has done here, and indeed it's there in Seamus Heaney's work as well, Ciarán, is this idea of the journey and what that gives to you as narrator and to us as potential audience members. There really is there's a real hook to pull you through the whole story.
There is, and also because he is battered and bruised, but in the middle of all that kind of energy and that extraordinary turmoil that he's in, there are these really very peaceful, quiet, beautiful moments of reflection. And like any journey, you go like, well, you know, I just want to get to the end. Well, you don't, because the journey itself holds all the colour, doesn't it, and all the extraordinary different layers of our lives. But as we get towards the end, you suddenly realise, well, there has to be an end to the story, and it's done very, very beautifully, very deftly, and very simply. And I think Neil pointed out about the idea of like going from some form of Celtic Druidism into a sense of forgiveness and redemption through Christianity. Or I may have got that completely wrong, I don't know.
But the other side of that is, I think you're probably not too far off the mark, to be fair. But the other side of it is, Ciarán, I suppose this is one of our epic tales, if you like, and it would seem that we in this part of the world are no different than anybody else in any other part of the world in the great myths. The same flaws, no. The same difficulties exist.
They do indeed, but we all have them in our own manner, in our own cultural kind of foibles, whatever it is, whatever we're driven to, our own memories, our own handed downness, if you like. No, it's but I also adore the fact that Seamus Heaney called it Heaney Astray. Oh, sorry, Sweeney Astray. He didn't say demented, crazy. He just like Heaney Astray, like he's gone AWOL, you know, that we do. You know, as Irish people, sometimes we get lost a bit and we try and find our way through things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people want to leave us where we are, and some people kind of reach out and grab you and try and help you back. And that happens in Sweeney's story as well. They try and reach for him and try and bring him back, and he's there for a bit and then he's gone again. It's really very exciting for me just to read it on the page anyway.
And in that respect, Neil, in that Sweeney Astray translation that Seamus Heaney gives, that astray in Hiberno-English does have the double meaning of astray, meaning slightly, you know, that maybe there's some kind of insanity has taken over at this point, but it also means astray in terms of wandering around the place in a purely physical sense. Is that something that Seamus Heaney picked up from the original Irish, or am I asking you too specific a question on that translation?
I don't know, but Seamus was such, as we all know, an inordinately skilled wordsmith. and he understood the subtleties and the nuance and the shades of words like very, very few others. It wouldn't surprise me at all that Seamus had that notion, you know, as he was putting his title on it. And, you know, indeed, Seamus was a man with whom I would have consulted about titles of pieces. He was a marvellous man at titles. And if I was thinking about a piece of music, a number of times I would have phoned Seamus up and said, what about this? And he would give you advice on a title. And he would say, no, maybe take the definite article out or do this. Or he was a great man for that. There's no doubt. And most of the song cycle is in English, but there are a few sections of it where it's the old Irish before the Cajun came in the early years of the 20th century. And Irla, you know, we couldn't have Irla without having some songs in Gaelic from Irla as well.
And in terms of setting, I'm just interested in terms of a musical setting. I don't know if easier or more difficult is the right way to ask it, but maybe what was the difference between setting those medieval or old Irish texts to setting the texts of Seamus Heaney? How different a process was that?
Well, actually not terribly different, because the prime was, the fundamental was Irla. And I know Irla's voice well, and we had been looking for a number of years for something to do together. And that was very serendipitous, actually, because I had a call from your good colleagues in RTE orchestras asking if I would like to write something. And they gave me a very kind of open book. And at the same time, I was talking to Irla. So, in fact, it was Irla's idea to set Sweeney. Mm. He said, well, what about? I said, fantastic. And all the way the paths were cleared. So, no, there was no great difference because of the centrality of Irla's voice to the project.
And you had set the words of Heaney, maybe setting them to music is not quite the right way. I'm thinking of the Aeneid, that final book, mm-hmm. or that final mm-hmm. publication of Seamus Heaney's that you did with mm-hmm. Stephen Ray. And you'd done some part of The Curate Troy as well. Was one of the choruses from it that you had set?
Exactly, Sean. Hope and History Rhyme, I set.
The famous chorus, yeah.
Yeah. And that was to part of the kind of launch of Derry as International City of Culture back in 2012, maybe. Anyway, yeah. About a decade ago or a little more, I think. I set that for choir and orchestra, Barry Douglas, Camerata Ireland, and soprano alto choir.
And finally, Kieran, if we can come to you, and I'll come back to Neil, sorry, for a piece of music just before we finish up. Neil talking very much about there the generosity of spirit, the artistic spirit, and indeed the man himself, Seamus Heaney. Had you much connection with Seamus Heaney over the years in that respect?
Not a lot, but the little I had, well, you just feel very blessed to be in his company, actually. He was, as Neil was saying as well, he was a great man of the theatre. I mean, his support for Field Day was phenomenal through the 80s. But he would also, when he moved down to Wicklow, he would be at theatre of anything that was going on, and a couple of things I was involved with, whether the Gate or the Abbey. Mm. You'd see him afterwards quietly. He'd be in the corner, and he'd just sort of beckon gently to you. You'd go over, and he was always the most gracious man afterwards. And whether we deserved it or not, I don't know, but he was that kindness shone out of him, and also his looking for the interest or the dynamic of a thing. He was just generally to me in this company, I'm sure if you've anyone who has been in this company just knows the pleasure. Yeah. And the joy and the inclusiveness of it all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, that. And I suppose it is a good way, a lovely way to mark the 10th anniversary of his death with this performance of Sweeney. Will I finish up, Neil? I let you choose whether you want to whether you want the listeners to listen to Look at Sweeney Now, Alas, or in fact I also have here a Iar Osuch, if I'm saying that correct, in terms of the little bit of Irish, one of the Irish texts that's in there that Ayler sings.
Well, I think Agair Hosach would be lovely to hear that, just to hear the inflections and the ornamentation and the beauty of Irla's voice with that text.
Yeah, and this is basically where he's saying, I am Sweeney. That's what he's saying, who he is in this section. Isn't that what he's asking?
He is, and he's celebrating the beauty of the trees and the topography of Ireland as well. He's having a reflective moment.
Míle buíochas a Svetlín in Ocht, Neil. Thanks very much. Agus go raibh agus a Féin. Ciarán, thanks for being with us this evening as well, Ciarán Hines.
Thanks, go raibh.
Slán Nuamh Birch.
Slán Gutamaigit, Sean.
Neil Slán. Martin and Ciarán Hines there. And this is a little bit of Iarla O'Leonard and the one of the Irish texts, Agar Rosach.
Agar Rosach Wiladach Atard Oskin Crin Ahalain Hriv Hoin Ahorak Novo Quill.
Absolutely beautiful. Agar Gosach, some of the Irish texts from Sweeney by composer Neil Martin, based on Sweeney Astray by Seamus Heaney. The RTE Concert Orchestra, the Iarla O'Leonard and narrator Ciarán Hines will be in Dublin at the National Concert Hall on Tuesday, August 15th at 1 p.m. and at St. Canice's Cathedral as part of the Kilkenny Arts Festival on Wednesday, August the 16th. Full information on nch.ie and kilkennyarts.ie. David Hoyle is a cabaret artist, singer, actor, comedian and film director and this year's special guest at the Giz Film Festival. As part of the festival, he brings his live show, The Ten Commandments, to the Project Arts Centre and his most recent film, Hedda, after Ibsen, based on, of course, the work by the Norwegian playwright Henrik Ibsen. Delighted to be joined by David Hoyle this evening. I want to talk about both of them, but let's start with The Ten Commandments, if we could, David.
Yes, yeah. Certainly, love.
Are these your rules for living? There's one I want to go straight to, actually, because it might tell me as much about you and your character as it will about the show itself. It's the second commandment. Thou shalt not make Captain Mannering out of Shirley Bassey.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know whether you're familiar with the wonderful old comedy, Dad's Army.
Yes, indeed we are.
Oh, good. Well, I felt that there was a certain pressure on me when I was a child to sort of become like a Captain Mannering type character, you know, very assertive, very patriarchal, very in charge. But really, Shirley Bassey sort of appealed to me more. So that tells you a little bit about me.
Well, tell
me. It's not a natural in Mannering.
Yeah, you're more a Shirley than you are a Captain Mannering. Tell me what specifically about Shirley Bassey attracted you, because you have to sing, according to the script at any rate, you have to sing in the manner of Shirley Bassey at some stage.
At some stage, absolutely. Well, I love her glamour, obviously, and her gowns, and I love the power of her voice and the way that she can interpret a song. I just find it absolutely beguiling.
And does that give us a sense of the fact that I've said that you have to sing in the manner of Shirley Bassey? How much of the Ten Commandments, the live show, how much of it is a kind of a big, large-scale cabaret-style performance?
Well, I'd say it is from start to finish, really. You know, I come on to some music made by the wonderfully talented Richard Torrey. And it's a multimedia presentation, so there's film shown. At one stage, I do a ribbon dance in front of a film. And that's sort of inspired by what's going on in the world at the moment, you know, with trying to tackle subjects like pollution and forest fires and the environment and just really what's happening at the moment, you know. And I think it's quite a very significant time that we're going through, and it's how we deal with it.
Yeah,
we seem to be living in uncertain times, and I feel that we all need some security and some stability, and that's what I'm trying to provide.
Yeah, well, that might be there present in one of the commandments as well. Thou shalt tolerate living in a rat-infested dystopia. But there's another one that I want to go to before I go on to Hedda, which I think may also tell us something about you and the nature of the art that you practice. Thou shalt not mistake wealth for success.
Correct. Yeah, well, as I've got older, you know, I'm sort of reconciled to the situation I'm in. And I think it's enough to be creative, to be artistic, and all the sort of the idea of having homes all over the world with infinity pools is slightly ridiculous, because it's not sustainable, you know, for the environment if we all lived like that. So it's as well to live a bit more humble
And I must say, you know, this might sound like you're preaching at people in your Ten Commandments. You certainly are not. There's great there's great entertainment within the cabaret style of the script as well. But let us move on to the film that is showing as part of the Gaze Film Festival, Hedda, after Ibsen. Tell us what you have done with your playing Hedda. What have you done with the Ibsen play?
Absolutely. Well, it's what Jen Hayes has done, who's an amazingly talented Liverpool-based theatre maker. And it was Jen's idea to take on board the Hedda Gabler as written by Henrik Ibsen and sort of give it a more modern spin, you know, tackling, I suppose, gender identity, things like this. I've loved working with her. How it started was we were at Edge Hill University and we were going to do it as a stage presentation, but unfortunately COVID came along, and then Jen had the brainwave of making it into a film.
Ah.
And we were very lucky. We got the support of the Soho Theatre in London, because that's where we made the film, you know.
Yeah.
And it was all made under strict social distancing rules, if you will, you know, so it was quite a quirky production.
Let's have a listen to it. I have a clip here from it, actually, David, which you might listen to, which again will give people a sense of the flavour of the film itself. And this is you singing in Hedda, describing the character herself.
Aristocratic intelligent, selfish and sexy and violent. She's unexpectedly real, it's true. If you're after loving, she's not for you. She's gonna snap your heart in two, it's true.
David Hoyle as Hedda in Hedda after Ibsen, based on the Norwegian playwright Henrik Ibsen. And it is, of course, the script, as David has been telling us, of Jen Hayes. Was Hedda Gabler, was it a part that you had a huge ambition to play for a long, long time, David?
It was a character that definitely appealed to me. So I was overjoyed when Jen offered it to me. You know, I just thought, what a good idea. And what an amazing character, you know, because Hedda is totally fascinating. She sort of has an ennui to life. I think she has a low boredom threshold. And everything in her life, as far as she's concerned, could be a lot better. You know, she could have more money, more servants, a larger, more lavish lifestyle. So she's quite discontent, really. And I think she finds a husband's relatives rather boring. So it did appeal to me.
Yeah.
In the same way a character like Mrs. Danvers appeals to me, you know, or Miss Havisham.
Have you played either of those?
No, I haven't. Not as yet.
Well, I think you're going to have to get on to Jen Hayes. I'm thinking of Mrs. Danvers in particular in Daphne du Maurier in that particular film. I would love to see and hear your version of that. But David, listen, thanks so much for joining us this evening and for speaking with us, and hope you enjoy your time in Dublin when you get here. Thanks very much, David. That's David Hoyle. And David's The Ten Commandments is on this Friday at the Project Arts Centre. And you can catch David Hoyle in conversation with the film director, Jen Hayes, and festival director, Greg Thorpe, on Sunday the 6th at the Lighthouse Cinema, following the screening of Hedda after Ibsen. David also appears in a short film called After Party, part of the Mighty Reel Sections, short sections, on Saturday evening, also at the Lighthouse Cinema. All of these events, part of the Gaze Film Festival, which runs from August the 3rd through until the 7th, gaze.ie, gaze.ie for full details. And that is our lot for this Monday evening. I'm Undine Passadivine, and Paula Shields researched. Michelle Gibson was the broadcast coordinator. Aisling Grufferty was on sound this evening. And tonight's programme produced by Ola McGann. Back with you at 6:30 tomorrow evening here on RTE Radio 1. John Creedon will be with you shortly.